Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Well, in Canada, we love to brag about our universal healthcare system, although it's not actually universal. Universal may be an aspirational goal, as I often say, but the fact is that if I need medical care, often a part of that care will be, or involve at least, a visit to the pharmacy. And often we have to pay out of pocket, or I guess we have medical benefits and whatnot through our jobs. We might have to still pay, but not as much, to get the medicines we need for our medical care. Extending that in terms of access to reproductive medical care, of course, begs an obvious question. Should the public purse fund access to contraceptive medicines and other implements for British Columbians who need them? Well, the Access BC campaign is making that exact case right now. There's currently our web poll at CFAX1070.com that folks can choose to vote in. Again, not a scientific representation, not a poll in terms of a public survey being taken, but it is useful from time to time to measure those who seek out the website and cast their votes as to which way they tend to fall on a certain matter. I want to welcome a couple of guests here at CFAX 1070. We don't normally do this, so I'm making an exception because our technical systems tend to get overwhelmed when I try to do two guests on the line at once as well as take calls, but we had a special request. Dr. Teal Phelps-Bondaroff joining us. How are you today?
Good morning, Adam. How are you doing? Good to talk to you again.
I'm well. Hold on now. I'm hoping that we don't lose our other person here. I'm going to see if I can bring Bree Gardner onto the line as well. Bree Gardner, are you there? Are you able to hear me?
Good morning. I can hear you just fine.
Okay, perfect. Okay, I've got both of you on, both of you locked in. If I lose either of you, we will attempt to reestablish contact immediately. Welcome to the program, both of you. Thank you for being here. Who wants to start? Because this is being called a no-brainer, free prescription contraception. Let's make the case.
Bree, you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. I'll take it away. Hey, so it is a no-brainer. It has economic costs that are easy to pay for and end up being paid back to the system basically immediately. Mm-hmm. And Teal will be great with the numbers. I'm going to tell you more about the stories. Gender disparity is something that's like pretty common in our society. And so for us to be able to pay back some of that through letting people have free access to something that will save us money seems a little bit easy.
Talk about the numbers, Teal.
Yeah, well, as Bree mentioned, so a 2010 study from Options for Sexual Health calculated that a program that would offer free prescription contraception across the province at no cost would save the provincial taxpayers $95 million annually, and that was in direct medical costs. And that's simply because folks who can't afford contraception also likely can't afford to raise a child or for an abortion and so on and so forth. So you have those kinds of costs being put onto the system. So it's got great savings. But as Bree mentioned, too, there's a lot of other benefits to this program as well. And one of them is obviously in affordability. You know, contraception can be very expensive. An IUD can cost between $75 and $380. You know, injections can cost $180 a year. And that can be a huge barrier for a lot of folks. And recent studies from UBC have indicated that cost is a barrier to accessing contraception. And if you don't have access to contraception, you have an unintended pregnancy, and that can derail life plans and have high personal costs. And this is another factor we often forget. Unplanned pregnancies have a higher risk of negative health impacts for the mother and child. And so that's why when you have a program that creates free prescription contraception, it ends up saving the government and individuals lots of money.
Do we have a sense of how many persons there are in BC who want to have contraception but are unable to access it?
So there was a study that was done by UBC recently, and they mostly looked at the barriers themselves. And that's often a very difficult number to calculate, so I wouldn't take a shot in the dark at it. What the research has indicated is that cost is a barrier. And Bree can speak about compounding barriers perhaps a bit better. It's not the only barrier. There's lots of other ones, and we need to be tackling those. But cost is something we can do right away and have direct savings.
Bree Gardner, your thoughts on additional barriers and compounding barriers?
Right. So, like Teal said, cost is only one of them. And when you get to the end of the day cost, you've already tried to go to a doctor. And maybe in rural BC, you don't have a doctor, so you have to get to a doctor, which is quite challenging. Maybe you're a trans person who doesn't have a safe doctor, and so you have to spend your day trying to find someone who will actually be able to look after your contraceptive needs.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear what you said. A what kind of doctor if you're a trans person? I didn't quite hear.
a sympathetic doctor, someone who is willing to look after the needs that you have that are not just related to contraceptive care, but also, you know, if you're a trans man and you go to a doctor and your doctor is like, you're a trans man, I can't give you contraception, you have to go find a different doctor. And so while that isn't something that Access BC can manage because these compounding barriers are complicated with, like, gender and disparity of maybe, like, rural locations, access to doctors itself, we can take away the end-of-the-day barrier, which is that you have to pay for it after all of these other things, trying to get there, trying to find, you know, good information about your reproduction health to begin with.
So how common would that be, a trans person needing medical care from their doctor and simply being refused? Because that's startling to hear.
Honestly, like, I identify as non-binary. I have a lot of trans people friends, and I would say that it's actually quite common to have doctors that don't understand our healthcare particularly well, don't know how to serve us, or flat-out refuse.
And one of the articles I was reading recently was talking about the simple challenge of a lot of places that offer contraception. It's specifically geared around women. And as a result, you'll have someone who is a trans man who is at a women's clinic, and there's often a lot of tension. And if it's not a friendly and inviting space, that can be very intimidating for folks to experience that.
How would that be addressed, or that matter be addressed through this this program that Access BC is putting forward?
Right. So it's not directly addressed by our program. What we're saying is that there are many barriers that people have to do in order to get reproductive care. So if we can take away and address the most simple of those, which is the financial barrier, and not requiring people to do means testing to have the money, we can make it an easier time for them to deal with the other barriers that are not so easily addressed.
I wanted to ask about the means testing element of this. I'm glad that you brought it up, because on one hand, should people who can't afford medical care get medical care? Absolutely, they should. It's always a different question, though, when we consider that our healthcare dollars that we have are scarce and there never seems to be enough of them, and whether or not we should offer free anything to someone who's got, I don't know, millions of dollars in the bank. What do you think of that?
Healthcare is a fundamental right.
But pharmacare is not. Pharmacare is not, and you know that.
Right.
Yeah.
And it should be, though, right? That's the problem, right? Having a universal healthcare program where pharmacare is not covered, to me, has always seemed ridiculous. You know, I had a friend who goes to his doctor, doesn't cost him anything, gets a prescription, fills a prescription. He's out fishing, he drops his pills, and now he can't afford to refill his prescription. He ends up in the emergency at higher expenses to the state. It's more stress for him, more health impacts for him. Mm. So the fact that we don't have pharmacare is kind of mind-boggling. But even in a world where we are moving towards pharmacare, you still need a program that covers prescription contraception explicitly. And that's simply because a lot of forms of prescription contraception aren't actually, or some of them aren't classified as medicine and therefore covered under pharmacare. Mm. So for example, a copper IUD is sometimes classified in some American health programs as a medical device. And as a result, it may not be covered under a program that covers prescription contraception. And similarly, that's one of the reasons why we've been advocating removing cost and not necessarily the barrier of getting a prescription for some contraception. We do support that, but it has to be done in conjunction with removing cost, because otherwise you have the situation where people's maybe pre-existing health plans, which would have previously covered prescription contraception, no longer do because that thing is no longer a prescription. So it's one of those aspects that why we have to have free prescription contraception in addition to pharmacare. Sometimes they need to be added up.
I was just going to say, because I think part of the issue with getting government to pay for anything is if you can make the case that it won't cost nearly as much as some people might be concerned that it will, it's more likely to happen. And I think the idea of extending it to every single person in British Columbia, government would be more apprehensive about committing to that financial obligation than if there was a means-tested system where folks who couldn't afford it were able to access it.
Well, I will just add here, there are currently a few programs out there that do help folks in dire financial situations. And there's a couple of problems with those. One is that there's cumbersome application processes, and people aren't aware of the programs. And sometimes they're sporadically available. So, for example, one clinic might stockpile spare IUDs, and often the people who can't afford them. But that's simply happenstance. You know, we were talking to a woman who runs a clinic, and if someone orders an IUD and it comes in and they pay for it, but they don't come to pick it up, they will then, you know, hold on to that for a little while, but then they can offer it for free to someone else. That's really nice, but we shouldn't have to rely on those kinds of random happenstance to access our fundamental rights. And there's one other thing worth mentioning, and that's even folks who might be well off, let's say a young person is covered under their parents' plan. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but now you have the choice of giving up your privacy in order to access your rights. So your parents now may know that you're on contraception. Well, that's fine for someone like me, for example, who's got, you know, lovely hippie artist parents, but that could also put some people in, it could actually imperil their safety. You know, if their partner or their parents knows that they're taking contraception, that might impact their health and safety and well-being. And so there's a privacy aspect, and you really shouldn't have to sacrifice your privacy to access your fundamental rights.
250-386-1161 star 1070. What do you think of the case being made by our two guests, Teal Phelps Bonderhoff and Bree Gardner, both of them with the Access BC campaign, calling for free contraception or taxpayer-funded contraception to be made available in British Columbia? A recent analysis on the costs and benefits conducted by the group Options for Sexual Health, this was actually 10 years ago, come to think of it, so the savings might even be larger today, estimated that the BC government, if it paid this money up front, would actually save $95 million a year because there would be fewer unplanned pregnancies, which of course themselves impose a burden on our healthcare system and the care that a person requires going through that. What do you think about this? 250-386-1161. Quick break. We're back in just a moment.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
The group Access BC is hoping that we will see coverage for contraceptives extended to all persons in the province of British Columbia when we see the new budget. Now, I am skeptical that we will see any substantial new spending in the budget, given the financial pressures the government of British Columbia has already been seeing. We want to continue our conversation now as I get both our guests back up on the board. I think we can take calls with two guests up at 250-386-1161 star 1070. I know we can take text messages, so I'll take a text right off the top. Teal Phelps Bonderhoff as well as Bree Gardner. Carol texts in, "Hey Adam, men get free contraception already. Vasectomies," Carol writes, "are quote unquote free." Carol writes, "It bugs me that the burden of reproductive responsibility chronically rests on the shoulders of women." She writes, "We need to emphasize to men that they too should take more responsibility. Thank you." Your thoughts?
I'll let Bree handle this one.
I mean, that is true. People who can access vasectomies, it's covered under BC healthcare. You know, condoms are really easy to find. You know what costs money? The pill, IUDs, things like that. It's true that the financial burden is disproportionately on people that don't have certain anatomies, which is, you know, people who have uteruses, women, trans men, non-binary people, for sure.
Now, one of you might know the answer to this. I'm not entirely sure, but tubal ligation procedures, which effectively will sterilize a woman like a vasectomy would, I guess if it was non-reversible, sterilize a man, are also part of the healthcare system. How does that work?
Go ahead, Tim.
Go for it.
I was going to say that it works, is that it's a process that's free and has more, you know, considerable costs on the state than, say, simply, you know, having access to prescription contraception. So all, you know, all these services should be free. But it, again, I think the person who texted in is very right. And that's why I pre-started by talking about this being a quality issue. I think I've purchased maybe two boxes of condoms in my entire life. Otherwise, I've always found them for free somewhere. And the fact that you know, a partner with a uterus has to spend $380 for an IUD is a totally inequality issue. And that is a barrier. What's interesting, in a recent UBC study, they found that when cost is removed, people use more reliable methods, and methods like IUDs are more reliable than, say, the pill, which you have to remember to take daily at the same time. And so we want people using the most effective method. But also some methods don't work for some folks, you know. So some people, the pill doesn't really work with their body chemistry, and they want to try an IUD. And when you're making a choice for the contraception that's right for you, there's a lot of factors to bear in mind. Cost shouldn't be one of them.
I think another, and I don't want to get too far into the vasectomy issue, another issue with the vasectomies is that an ordinary vasectomy is not reversible. I know they do have some that can be reversible, but there's always that chance that when they try to reconnect things for whatever reason, it won't work and you will just be stuck without children the rest of your life, even though you would have preferred them. That risk, I think, weighs heavily on some. What do you think?
Well, I think it probably does. But also just building on that, there's a lot of really interesting technology that's being developed around contraception. There is the reversible one that I've seen some studies on.
Yeah.
I actually did dinner a few years ago with one of the gentlemen who's working on this, the male pill, which basically produces a retrograde orgasm. So a person does not ejaculate. And there's some good technology happening. And when those pills are available, they should be free as well.
In terms of what we expect to see in the budget next month, and Bree Gardner or Teal Phelps-Bonderhoff, either of you can answer this if you think you know. Do you think you'll actually see this, or at this point, is the province, does it already have its priorities locked in?
I might jump in on this one. So this summer, we participated in the 2020 public budget consultation, and we were very pleased that our recommendation was included in that budget proposal. So we're recommendation number 50, so folks can go find that in the budget recommendations. Mm-hmm. So that was very promising. We've been working behind the scenes for about 2 years, since 2017, meeting with MLAs and meeting with their staff and meeting with ministers. And the response we've got has been very positive across the aisles. I mean, that's because this is a fantastic policy. You know, it's one that saves individuals money, it saves the government money, it increases health outcomes, it promotes good education systems. And so it's a great policy, but it's not going to happen without support. So what we're doing right now is we're running a province-wide letter-writing campaign, and we're encouraging people to visit our website, accessbc.org. And with about 4 or 5 clicks, they can send a letter to their MLA to let them know that they support this cause. And then they're welcome to get in touch with us if they want to get more involved. And we're always welcome to have more people. But that's going to be critical to really push us higher on the agenda. It's a great policy. It's one that's been done around the world in France, the UK, Spain, Sweden, Denmark, the Netherlands, Italy, Germany. Everyone's doing it because it works, it saves money. But we just need to get that final nudge to see it across the finish line.
It works. It saves money, and I won't argue with that. The evidence seems to demonstrate that. So why haven't we done it yet?
Well, one thing that's really interesting is that BC made Mifepristone, which is the abortion pill, freely available at no cost in January 2018. Hmm. And individual pills there cost about $350, and that's a single abortion pill, whereas that's about the same price as an IUD, which can last for 5 to 10 years. So I think the reason is just we're progressing, we're developing new policies, and there's sometimes barriers to adopting new things. But really, there's no reason not to do it.
All right. I think we need to wrap this up here. We're running out of time. Any final thoughts from you today, Bree Gardner?
Just make sure that you get in touch with your MLA if you think that this is an important cause. Letter writing will help. It causes, good positive change. And this is a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer for so many people, not just people who are trying to have families, but people who are also, like, needing it for medical reasons, for low cost. It's great. Do it. Support it. It'll be good.
Teal Phelps-Bonderhoff, any final thoughts?
Well, it's a cold snow day out there. So, you know, some people, you know, don't want to get outside to do something good for equality and saving our province money. So, you know, don't go outside, stay safe, but instead go to accessbc.org and send in a letter and, help make our province a slightly, you know, lovely, better place.
All right. We will see what is contained in the provincial budget when it finally does come down. If this is, of course, there, I'm sure you'll both be cheering and very successful. If it's not there, though, what happens next in the advocacy campaign?
I can speak this really briefly, if you don't mind. We're gonna keep pushing. This is a great policy. And one thing that was included in the provincial budget recommendations was that the government's looking at a targeted and incremental program. So we're going to keep the conversation alive. And as Bree mentioned, even if this is, you know, if this is included in the budget, there's still a lot of work to be done. Cost is only one of a numerous impounding barriers that prevent people from accessing contraception. So we'll be working on some other issues, hopefully, and our team will meet up. And I think it's a really good policy, so we'll keep pushing until it gets adopted.
All right. Thank you both for your time today. It's appreciated.
Thank you. Yeah, have a nice afternoon.
All right. Take care. Bye now. Teal Phelps-Bonderhoff, as well as Bree Gardner, both with the Access BC campaign, number 50 on the budget recommendations. I had forgotten the actual number. Will BC move forward with this? You never know. They might. We'll find out when the budget comes down next month. And as you heard our guests say, even if it's not in this budget, it may well be in one in future as the advocacy campaign continues. We will take a quick break here at CFAX 1070. We will get the latest from the CFAX newsroom. Then when we come back, the Victoria Humane Society issuing a warning earlier today. I know Penny Stone was speaking with Al Farabee. Pets left outside is a matter of course in weather such as this. No, you don't want to do that. You want to make sure your dog, your cat, any pet that would normally be outside certainly is not just left to their own devices, especially in this weather. Tips, tricks, what you need to know, that's coming up. Don't go anywhere.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Check on the dog. No, if you've got a dog that normally lives in the backyard, one, you should check on the dog periodically anyway. Two, it's really snowy out there. It's going to get even worse tonight. I'm seeing projections of 10, 15 or more centimeters. That's a big deal. If we get, you know, between 10, 15, even 20 centimeters in some parts of South Vancouver Island tomorrow, you better believe this city is going to be operating on, well, I was going to say minimal power. Hopefully we still have power. It'll be operating on minimal staffing. Let's put it that way, because 30 centimeters is a foot for those of you who work in Imperial. So if we've got 20 centimeters coming in some areas, that's the better part of a ruler. That's a lot of snow on the roads. The plows are going to be working overtime trying to keep up with that. Penny Stone with the Victoria Humane Society was on with Al Faraby this morning, reminding us that we have to keep extra special watch on our pets.
Hi, I'm good this morning. Worried about all the little animals out there, though.
What's your biggest worry when we come into weather like this?
My biggest worry is the animals that live outside, people who keep their dogs outside, who leave their cats outside, them freezing to death. People don't think it happens here. It happens here. People think that, oh, you know, they're animals. They've got the fur. The one thing that people don't understand is a lot of these animals aren't accustomed to it. So, I mean, when you're in colder weather, like they say, oh, well, you know, the huskies live outside in the Yukon. And I don't think they should, but they're used to that weather year-round. Their bodies are used to the temperatures. Their fur is a different, they get a thickened, different fur. The dogs here don't have that. And so when they're outside, they get so cold so fast, and people don't realize it. Just because they have a thick fur, that doesn't make it great. So them suffering in the weather is what kills me. And I mean, some people will never bring their dogs in, and that's the reality. It's very sad for us, but that's the reality. So it's really important that if they're not bringing their dogs in, that they have shelter and they have it, that it's raised off the ground, because that will keep them a little bit warmer, and that it provides protection from wind and cold. And then their water, like people think when there's snow, well, they can lick the snow. There's lots of water there. That's not true. They can't eat enough snow to keep themselves hydrated. And their bowls freeze, and they freeze really quickly. So making sure that they always have fresh water.
So this wind chill right now with the conditions the way they are, it's the worst is what you're telling me.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible. If you have a wind chill factor of minus 15, In 30 minutes, they can get frostbite. Like, nobody thinks of that here. They don't think of, and because we're not used to it, it catches us off guard.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, oh my God. Like, and we've seen puppies from the island that are coming with frostbite ears, frostbite tails, frostbite feet. And it's like, okay, we're better than this. We need to do better. So that's my biggest worry. But, you know, even just for your regular pets that are living indoors and have a great life, when you're walking them, the salt and the sand used to make it so that it's safe for us makes it dangerous for them, because it gets between their paws, and then when they get home and they're licking it and they're trying to, like, it's not just the ice that gets stuck between their paws, and you really need to clean that out, but the salt and the sand. So when you're when they get back home and they start licking it out, ingesting that salt can make them very sick.
Right.
So you have to be really careful about that, cleaning their toes and between their toes when they get home from their walk.
So you can't take them out for a walk, but just make sure you clean their paws properly when you get back. Is that fair?
Yeah, and don't take them out for as long as you normally would, because, like, if they're running around in your backyard and they're getting the snow, and that's fun, but don't, like, it starts to really pack between their toes, so make sure you're cleaning that out, because that can make frostbite set in quicker than you would think in our, like, you know, people really don't think about things like frostbite when you're in Victoria, right?
No.
But, yeah, that's pretty scary. And then, of course, we always want to talk about antifreeze, because there's so, antifreeze, they can have a teaspoon of antifreeze and it can kill them. So make sure that you're using PetSafe antifreeze, that's the propylene-based antifreeze, instead of the stay far, far away from ethylene glycol antifreeze, because the nice thing is we're seeing less and less of that kind of antifreeze.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are switching over, the stores are switching over. But really, the antifreeze kills them pretty quickly. And if your dog is lethargic and throwing up after you've been out, like, I would get him to a vet.
Boy, I didn't know about the antifreeze, that there was a difference and there was a pet safe one. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it came out about 10 years ago, and everybody's kind of switching over to it, and they have little pictures of safe for pets on them. So it's really important to use that kind, because especially for the cats, we see it a lot. They get underneath the cars, and because they can't find any water, they'll start licking up the antifreeze. So you see it a lot in cats that are outside.
Right.
So it's really, really important.
Man, oh man. Okay, so we've got the snow coming in. It's going to be cold. It's going to warm up towards the weekend. But for the next day or two, even if you've got an outdoor pet, bring them inside. Is that kind of the advice?
Please bring them inside. And if you don't want to bring them in your house, set up something in your garage. Set up, like, I would love you to bring them in your house so they're up on their couch. But if you're not going to do that, like, in the garage, set up a shed. Do something where they have somewhere to get away. Somewhere to get away, because this wind is killing us. Like, we're out in it for seconds, and we think it's, you know, it's freezing. But they're out in it, and they're living in it. And it's really, bring them in. Like, we really want, you know, we really want them to be in and warm. But
bring the dog inside. Bring the cat. I don't care if the dog normally stays outside or if the cat normally stays outside. Folks, take it from me. Believe me, like I don't tell you to do things very often. You will thank yourself, especially with the weather that's coming tonight. We are expecting wind and cold and snow in the next 24 hours here on the South Island, unlike anything I would venture a guess that we have seen in years easily. So if you've got a cat that normally lives outside the house and you can find a way to coax a cat inside tonight, tonight's a good day to do it, I should say. If you got a dog, normally either the dog should come inside at night anyway. I don't know, maybe that's just the way I was raised. What would you do if you saw a dog left outside in this cold? Would you say, hey, buddy, you want to bring your dog inside? Would you actually go that far? Would you say something? Would that be impolite? What would you do if you saw an animal outside in this cold? Have you seen any animals outside in this cold? Oh, there's an interesting question. I want to do some open lines on this. 250-386-1161, star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. Tonight's going to be a cold one. Coldest one we've had in a long time. There's going to be a huge amount of snow. I have no idea how I'm going to get to work tomorrow. I have no idea how a bunch of other people are going to get to work tomorrow. We are counting on the Herculean efforts of the plow crews that will be, I would assume, standing vigil and working literally all night to keep the city operating as this big dump of snow comes. But as for little Kitty or Fido in the backyard, nah, they're going to need protection tonight. Quick break. We're back right after this.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, time for open lines. You want to weigh in on that issue, pets left out in the cold? I don't know. Is that really happening here in Victoria? I know, and I believe Penny Stone when she says that they've had little puppies brought in that have frostbite on their ears. I think a lot of folks out there don't realize just how cold it is. And I, regular listeners to the show know this, but I was born in a place called Thompson, Manitoba. We used to go to Winnipeg because it was the nice big city and it was warmer there. That's not a joke. That is literally how Thompson relates to Winnipeg. It's a town that sprung up around a nickel mine in northern Manitoba. It's a lot warmer here. My family moved here in 1986, so I've been in Victoria most of my life. I still think of myself as being from here, despite being born in Manitoba. But when you get so cold, and I think many of us may have forgotten, or if we were on the prairies a long time ago, we may have forgotten just how dangerous the cold can be if a person is left outside exposed to it, or an animal. A pet left outside exposed to it. You know, we're used to around here freezing cold is, oh, it's only 2 degrees, it's only 3 degrees, it's only 4 degrees, it's only 5 degrees. We're in the minuses now. So that's very cold for us. So you want to make extra care that your pets are properly taken care of, especially for the next few days. Got an email here from Ryan, and it's a fair point. We were talking about what we would call the Duke and Duchess of Sussex were they to no longer have their royal titles. And I said that Harry, I guess, would just be just Harry Windsor would be his last name. Ryan Wright said, well, actually, he's half Windsor and half Spencer. And I suppose that's fair, although the whole idea of adopting one parent's name over the other parent's name, I guess, would be a very similar one in terms of the heritability of the crown itself. Don't want to get too far into that. 250-386-1161, star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. You want to weigh in on anything that we have discussed on the show so far today, we are happy to take your call and accommodate those complaints, those thoughts, those whatever you want to weigh in on these topics we've been discussing today. I know some folks may complain about the prospect of paying for security costs for the royals if they come here. Would they even be royals anymore, though? See, that's the other thing, is that there seems to be a desire, a wish for them to no longer be in their official roles and their official capacities, is why they're trying to leave in the first place. So if you're saying, well, of course they should get security because they're royals, if they're no longer royals, does that mean they have the same expectation to the public purse funding for security? I don't actually know the answer to that. I'm not sure there is one. definitively. And again, and I'm glad this one caller did remind us all of this, because it's true, they haven't actually refused to pay for anything. I don't think they've been asked yet. The decision that Canada has to make, I suppose, would be to even ask whether or not they would reimburse the costs for that policing. Let's go to our phone lines. I think this is Bonnie calling in. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to Open Lines. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to make mention, I heard on the radio the other day, I believe it was Nightingale, Anne Nightingale. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she was talking about the birds, and
yes,
she was talking about peanut butter,
yeah,
putting peanut butter out. Peanut butter is great, but don't put homogenized peanut butter out because of the process they put it through.
Mm-hmm.
When it's freezing,
yeah,
the bird beaks stick.
Oh, no.
Together.
And their little beaks get glued shut by peanut butter? That's horrible.
Yep. So if you're going to put peanut butter out, for goodness sakes, spend a little bit more. Buy Adams and or whoever you can get that is not homogenized.
I would never have thought of that, Bonnie, but admittedly, my knowledge of how to feed birds is exceedingly limited. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Have yourself
watch
a good day.
Because, boy, they sure need their feed right now.
What do they do when it's cold, though? That's what I want to know. You know, the little things, their metabolisms go a mile a minute. They constantly need new sugar water in order to stop themselves, yeah, literally starving. What do they do when everything's frozen? I guess they just sort of huddle down and wait, or what is it?
They do, but they can only go so many hours without feed.
Yeah.
So they do. They all clamp together in a little puddle in a little hole,
yeah,
and keep them like in a little birdhouse or something like that. Yeah, I've got three feeders out, and I just keep bringing them in and changing them and putting them back out. And I take them in at night, and
yeah,
then at about 6 a.m. I put them out again. But I've got socks over top of my feeders to the whole feeder to try to keep it from freezing, because it really freezes fast here.
You have a lot of hummingbirds still using it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. They know you. Yeah. They probably know your house. They can find it miles away, can't they?
Yes, they can.
Okay, that's good. It's the one with all the food. Bonnie, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. All right, have a great day. Bye now. 250-386-1161, *1070, a free call on your wireless device. Let's go to Derek. Hey, Derek, welcome to Open Lines. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Mr. Adam Sterling, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Awesome. No, I took a month off, actually, so I have kind of been tuned out a bit. So I took a little vacation.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm back at the job, and I'm seeing the voice of Victoria, and it's good to be informed.
What do you make of the topics we've been discussing today, like security for the former, if they become former, Duke and Duchess of Sussex?
Well, here's the thing. We are a Commonwealth country, and during a state of war or a state of martial law, we absolutely would be paying for the cost of the monarch. And in fact, if the monarchy, if there are residents, if they're hiding in Canada, well then, by default, that kind of makes them an auxiliary representative, of the crown. And so, I do understand, the whole thing with taxpayers not wanting to fund, their private security and everything, but when it comes to matters of national security, that's a bit of a different situation.
Mm.
And people need to understand there's a distinction there. I can tell you that there's all kinds of private military contractors that provide security for both corporate and government, diplomatic escorts.
Well, any large corporation will have a corporate security force of some form. It's not talked about, but it is done, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not well known about, for sure. I mean, they're not, they don't exactly advertise. It's all...
Why would they, right?
They don't have to, because, a lot of people that are retired from the military, or we go into law enforcement and then they figure out right away that, you know, law enforcement doesn't pay well, so they go off and do other things. And, you know, all the power to them. It's free market society, right? But I just wanted to mention briefly about the native situation. Now, here's a name that you should, and all your listeners and everybody should look and research. His name is Dr. Nick Begich. His father was a famous congressman in Alaska.
I'm not familiar with him.
You should be. Well, the native, for anyone who studies First Nations issues in North America, should know who this guy is. Dr. Nick Begich. I can't remember his father's name, but you just look it up, and his father's famous. He also has a brother who was a congressman, who was a state senator of Alaska. And anyway, his plane crashed, and he disappeared conveniently right as he was negotiating the largest native land deal in history. So you should look up, because what happened was, this was back in the 1960s, okay, 67, I think, or something like that, and he negotiated this deal, and he got together in Alaska. It has the highest concentration of number of tribes. I think it's like 78 tribes in the state of Alaska.
Well, there's 200 indigenous nations in the province of British Columbia, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I know they have a lot, and so they maybe it's more than 100 then, but they basically negotiated, and they worked with all the tribes, and so anyway, I would say that would be the template. That deal, which did get passed and did get ratified, so what it's done is it's locked up a lot of the natural resources in Alaska and kept them safe, you know, and so anything that gets developed, now Alaska has been getting developed, but it's being developed responsibly. And I would say that it's as close as you're going to get to that perfect balance, right?
Well, that's something I can certainly look into. Thank you very much,
definitely,
Derek. I appreciate
definitely, yeah.
it. Take care. 250-386-1161, *1070, a free call on your wireless device. Let's go next to, I think it's Doreen. Hi, Doreen. Welcome to Open Lines. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Adam. Two things.
Sure.
I'm weather weary, and I'm out 10 kilometers west of Souk.
Oh, it's right? Snowy out there, isn't it?
And the wind has just picked up, and I'm so tired of the wind.
Oh, no. Do you have your power? You need your power. I know you're talking to me, so you've got power somewhere. Do you have your house power, or are you on a generator?
Oh, you know, we're fine, but we do have a generator if it does go out, so I'm absolutely fine. But what I was calling was to tell you about hummingbirds.
Yeah? How do they live? I think of a hummingbird as a vibrating ball of energy that requires constant reinforcement to stay in existence, and I have no idea what they do when it's like this outside.
Well, I've got hummingbirds like crazy out here, and right now I've got heat lamps on my feeders.
Oh, they must love you.
They do. I actually see them. I see them actually sort of hovering under the lamp.
Yeah, they're trying to stay warm.
Yeah, one of them, the light went out last night and it froze, but I've got a new bulb in there.
Oh,
and I do see them in the low bushes. There's one right now feeding, but I do see them hiding in the low bushes. I think they do get a certain amount of warmth that way.
Yeah.
But all my birds right now, I'm a real bird lover, and I'm going to run out of seed, which is freaking me out because I don't want to go on the roads.
I was going to say the roads, we are being told by the experts, by our first responders, to stay off the roads when it's snowy like this unless you absolutely have to. And,
yeah.
and I don't think that's going to be getting better overnight. Actually, I'm afraid it'll be a little worse. So tomorrow morning,
we're
all going to cross our fingers and do our best tomorrow morning. I'm not sure how it's going to work.
It's pretty bad right now. I can't really see across the yard. It's like a blizzard at the moment.
Yeah, it's coming this way. Victoria's a great place because it never snows. The problem is it does snow every single year. We just forget about it.
Yes, it does.
But that's okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with me, Doreen. You, I'm sure, are the most popular house on your block with all the hummingbirds. I'm sure they tell each other in their special language. And, good luck. You spend a lot of money on that, having heat lamps outside? That's expensive.
I spend about $100 a month on my birds, actually.
Wow.
The quail come when I call.
Do they really?
They really do.
How do you call them? Make the sound for us.
Come on, babies.
And that works. And they come with that.
They have, every year, their babies come, and they grow up, and they come every winter. And seriously, it's funny. They see me at the window, and they know food's coming, so they come running under the deck, and I toss food over the edge, and away we go.
Generation after generation of quail, Doreen, have told their children and their children about the kind and benevolent entity that has existed since forever that feeds them, and it's you.
It's me.
Isn't that neat to think about?
I love it. They do call me Snow White, some of my friends.
Doreen, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. Have a great day. Doreen, out in the West Shore. Snow's coming down pretty substantially outside my window. I don't really have a window that looks out on the city. The way that our setup works here at 1420 Broad Street is when this building was rebuilt back in the early 2000s, they essentially removed the inside of the entire old brick building that we're in and built a nice, shiny, new state-of-the-art building in the middle of it, a three-story building inside a two-story facade so the windows don't quite match up. I can see out to the sky deck, though, from where I am sitting right now in the CFAX studio. So I can see rain or snow falling. I just can't see beyond into the city itself because there's a wall in the way. But I see piles of snow coming down right now. It's going to be a very snowy night. Let's see here. Thankfully, a texter writes, I don't generally suffer from bystander syndrome, especially when it comes to animals. I grew up on a farm in Alberta and saw my mom bring in a menagerie of animals when the weather got unsafe for them. I enjoyed cuddling baby cows, pigs, chickens. We even had a de-scented pet skunk we named Susie. Thank you for this important PSA, Adam Texter. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Imagine cuddling baby cows and pigs and chickens in a storm. But you know what? That's something hardwired in us, isn't it? We have this instinct where we want to sort of extend our horizon of empathy and we want to care about the animals and the pets that we have both, of course, entrusted to us, as well as those we may happen upon during circumstances like inclement weather and freak storms and whatnot. Something deeply etched into our DNA where we want to care for things. And we derive a great deal of satisfaction. Our last caller spent $100 a month on birds. But you know what? Money well spent. Because when you think about it, money that we spend on anything ultimately is money that we're not going to get back. What matters is the sort of enjoyment, the self-actualization that we derive through that activity. Those are some lucky birds, I'll tell you. Imagine being a hummingbird out in this, and you know where the house is that has the heat lamps behind it with the sugar water. I tell you, that's like a hummingbird that has the map to Atlantis or El Dorado or some magical place. That's actually really cool. I like that. Thank you for sharing that story. All right, having some fun here. We need to, especially when the weather gets all dreary and cold like this. We are going to take a quick break. We're going to check in with the newsroom, the main CFAX Noon Edition. We're then going to talk with an individual from a representative, I should say, from Campaign 2000. Now, they're a group, once upon a time, 20 years ago, set a goal. No more child poverty 30 years later. We've got 10 years to go. How are we doing? Child poverty, over 1.3 million children in Canada still live in poverty. What does that look like in terms of different groups in order to focus our aid and better craft our policies? And what is the prospect of getting to a point where there are zero Canadians living in poverty? Can we do it? That conversation coming up.